He gets the most assists from me and the most spoon-fed baskets ever.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. And today's Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast is also brought to you by Draft.com. Use the promo code LOFANTASY to get a free entry into a draft with your first deposit. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at BasketballMonster.com. And you can find me, as always, on Twitter at RedRock_Bball. Make sure you're also checking out the Locked On Podcast Network Twitter handle, which is at LockedOnNBAnet, and Basketball Monster at BaskMonster. We're going to talk about the 8 games from Tuesday. We're going to preview the 6 games for Wednesday. We're going to talk about the devastating injury in New York, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on a second-year player in New Orleans, Cheick Diallo. So,
Let's get to it, indeed.
We will get to all the information about Kristaps Porzingis later on.
Porzingis.
But let's start with the monstrous line of the night, and it goes to Paulie George of the Oklahoma City Thunder. 38-5-3 for Georgie. 6 triples, 6 steals, 11 of 23 from the field, and beautifully done, 10 of 12 from the free throw line. He is the 14th ranked player this year. 6th over the last 2 weeks, really, really cranking it up, has really rectified that field goal percentage, which was a massive hole at the beginning of the year, shooting 47% over the last month and 50% over the last 2 weeks, has had a stellar 3-point percentage all season, but he's got those 2-point numbers up. He is averaging 22, 5.5, and 3 with over 3 threes, over 2 steals, and half a block on 45 and 82, and he is going to challenge for that top 12 by the end of the season. He's the 14th guy as at the moment, as I mentioned, sporting a usage well down from last season. He was, the last 3-4 years, he's been at 28, 33, 30, and 29. Granted, that 33% year was the one where he only played 6 games due to the broken leg. But high usage in all those other seasons. He is down to 25.5 this season, but his fantasy ranking pretty much exactly the same because he's focused more on defense. He's getting more steals per game now, and he's still doing those other things that, like scoring. Even though that is down a little bit, he is still providing value in many categories, much better than what many people anticipated he would be this season. I was probably a little bit higher on him than a lot of people, but not this high. Didn't think that he would be, you know, challenging for top 15, top 12 sort of numbers, which is what Paul George is currently doing, and he was awesome for the Thunder today in their big victory over the Golden State Warriors. I'm going to tell you now about today's sponsor, the guys bringing you this show, and that is the guys over at Draft. Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap DFS sites? That's why Draft should be your new favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft 2. You can play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players to Draft get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, which is LOFANTASY. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code LOFANTASY. It gets even better than that. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Locked On Fantasy Basketball listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search for Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come and play for free right now with that promo code LOFANTASY. Join in the Locked On specific leagues over there. It's DFS, but it's snake draft format, no salary cap, and I am sure that you will enjoy the fantasy contests over on Draft. The waiver wire line of the night goes to John Simmons of the Orlando Magic. The Cavs were up 18 points at halftime. Simmons ripped off 22 of his own in the third quarter for a huge victory, a 34-point turnaround in the second half. Just honestly befuddling that that could actually happen to a team like the Cavs. Simo had 34-7-2, 2 triples, a steal and a block, 12 of 17 from the field, and went to the line 9 times and hit 8 of them. I've been relatively critical of Simmons this season. You've heard me say that. But over the last month, he is a top 100 player. That's coming on the back of a very, very high field goal percentage. 53%, in fact, and 41% from three. Last season, he was 42% from the field and 29% from three. And over the course of the season, he's at 47 and 34. So you'd think that this last month's worth of action, the 2018 version of John Simmons, is probably a little bit misrepresentative of what he actually is as a player. In that last month, in only 29 minutes, averaging 13.5, 2.2 and 2.4. with 0.7 steals and 0.7 blocks. So okay numbers, but honestly, really fueled by that shooting percentage, which is probably 5 or 6% above where he's going to be the majority of the year. Against the Cavs, many players have huge games. We have seen that from so many guys, but Simmons, he's now scored in double digits in 5 consecutive games. So if you're looking for points, he is a guy to get, but in those 5 games, he shot at least 50% from the field in all 5 of them. So it just feels like he is going to have an absolute stench-ridden run of shooting of like multiple 30% games, because that's just the sort of player that he has been in his career. Not someone who's known as a high percentage shooter. Although in saying that, his rookie year, he was 51 and 38 for a true shooting of 59. So maybe there is some hope, but in an extended role last year, he really did flounder with his shooting. So maybe he can sustain a level of efficiency, not this level, but a decent level of efficiency that can provide some value. I just don't love him as an overall fantasy guy. Doesn't produce much in any of the other categories outside of points and that field goal percentage, which is really propping his value up. And if that drops, then his value does drop a bit. I wouldn't be classing him a must-own, especially this week with the trade deadline looming and with huge pickups appearing like Joshie Jackson in Phoenix or Mick Beasley in New York. The young gun of the night, we don't need to talk about him for too long. It's Joel Embiid, 27 and 12, 3 triples, 3 assists, 3 blocks, 10 of 20 from the field. He's the 15th ranked player this season. He's playing 32 minutes a night over the year, 33 over the last month. He's playing in back-to-backs now. He's going to be a 20 and 10 guy who probably averages 2 blocks and elite percentages. Is at 58 true shooting, 49 from the field and 79 from the line, and still just shooting 29% from 3. So massive scope for him to actually improve that. I think we're feeling pretty good about the injuries from him. As we move forward, he's got a chance to play over 60 games this season. He's on track to do that at the moment, so that's obviously a huge positive given what we know of his career. Played 41 games already, so halfway through, he hasn't played half the games. He's played more than half the games, but if the season ended today, that is obviously 41 is half of 82. Really, blowing some of our preseason predictions about Embiid out of the water, and hopefully he can continue on this realm. We know he is an elite guy who is going to be a top 10 fantasy guy for quite a while, it appears. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Jason Tatum is not all that hot in this game. 4 points with 1 rebound, nothing else. 2 of 9 from the field. That 3-point percentage continues to fall. He's at 44% for the field for the season now from 3, 36% over his last 12 games, and he has fallen outside the top 140 over the last month. He's still a top 80 player for the season, in large part because those numbers to start the season were so high, but we're seeing numbers really regress now. Low block numbers, low steal numbers, low assist numbers, subpar rebounding numbers, and average shooting numbers, which were all the sort of numbers that he projected to have coming out of college. It was just this crazy high number that started off the season. And while he's been great, and I don't know if you've heard, he's only 19, the numbers are starting to come back to earth now for Jason Tatum. Still a guy that I'm holding. I'm not dropping him now, but don't be surprised if we get an extended run of 44-45% field goal instead of 50%, which he was running at for the first 2 months. Not something that we should be overly surprised about if that actually happens. But it's been a great start. It's been a great run, but we're seeing a few guys like him and the future MVP fall off a little bit as the season progresses while other rookies push forward. And that's another one of those things that I'm going to study pretty extensively in the offseason is the talk of the rookie wall. It's one of those things like contract years, like revenge games, that people only highlight it when it happens, and they're for every time, every person who, every rookie who drops off as the season progresses, there's another rookie who gets significantly better as the season progresses. So it's not a catch-all term that you can say rookies are all going to drop off, because for as many guys who regress in the second half of the season, many more get much, much better. And again, that's something I'm going to be doing some research on across the off-season to produce my stats and my evidence for that, even though I have looked at it informally. I am going to be putting together something like that to talk about. let's have a look now at question time. Today's question comes from someone whose name has got an indecipherable amount of characters in it. I'm going to say it's Calvin, but there's just so much peripheral bullshit going on in his name that I'm not going to be able to be confident with that. His Twitter handle is Crammin2, and his question is, which local broadcast crew has the best announcers? To me, it's not really close. It's the Timberwolves. They're the number one. They don't spout out hot take bullshit. They don't seem, they did have one poor comment the other day. I don't remember what it was, but there was a bad one from the other day. But they don't spout out hot takey Jalen Rose. Oh, he can definitely continue shooting 47% from three because he got better from last year. They don't put up that sort of crap. They use advanced stats, analytics, common sense. Yeah, they're critical of the team when it's necessary, critical of Tibbs' rotations, critical of many different things when necessary. They're really up to date with the modern NBA. So I'd say the Timberwolves have the best local broadcast crew, but there's quite a few that are good. And I talk about the bad ones a lot. I talk about Reggie Miller and Mark Jackson and national broadcasts and the bullshit that comes out. I talk about the Cavs. I talk about the Bulls. They're being terrible, but there's plenty who are really good. The Knicks is fantastic. The Brooklyn Nets is one of the best. I don't mind. I like the Hornets. Stephanie Reddy, Dell Curry. I like the Hornets broadcast. Pretty happy with that. The Mavs broadcast booth is pretty solid as well. The Pelicans. Joel Myers, really good down there with them. The Sixers, I like the Sixers broadcast. I like the Blazers, bro. I was a little bit out on the Blazers a couple of years ago, but I think they've really started to step their game up. I like all those guys. There's quite a few others. You know, the Hawks is okay. Dominique can get a little bit grating. But there are quite a few who are solid, but they're probably the best handful, whatever name there's, eight teams. They're probably the best eight teams, I think, in terms of local announce crews. Which, if they're ever on, you get the choice of broadcasters, go that side rather than some of the other garbage that is out there for some other teams. Let's go into these games now and break them down, try and get some information out of what actually went down on Wednesday. The first game, the Cavs and the Magic, I already talked about it. The Cavs had an 18-point halftime lead and somehow lost, sorry, 16-point halftime lead and somehow lost by 18 points. Just an absolutely horrendous effort. LeBron put up some numbers still.
LeBron James.
25, 10, and 5 with two threes, but I don't know what's going on with this team. It feels like it's going to be almost impossible for them to make it back to the finals. Now, things can change, but at this point, they're just bad. J.R. Smith's bad, Tristan Thompson, Jeff Green, Isaiah Thomas is bad, Jose Calderon, Derrick Rose, Jay Crowder. There's just multitudes of players who are just not good players, despite their past reputations maybe suggesting that they were. It's a real struggle. Smith, and to, I guess, contradict what I just said, he was okay here. 12 points with 4 triples for the plumber, not adding him. While Tristan Thompson had 12 and 9 and nothing else. And that's probably best case Tristan Thompson scenario. 14 to 16 team league sort of a guy. Dwayne Wade played. He had 11 and 4. He will sit out tomorrow's game. While Isaiah Thomas, just brutal again. 11 points on 13 shots with 8 assists. I don't think you should be dropping him, but we're well aware he's never returning to top 20 value that he was last season. He might even struggle to get back to being top 60 value. If someone dropped him, I would add him in a heartbeat. But it's been pretty average so far for Isaiah Thomas. Jay Crowder, if you grabbed him in the hopes that when Kevin Love went down, he was going to do anything, I think you can get rid of that thought out of your brain. 2-2 in 26 minutes for Crowder. For the Magic, Lord Alfred Payton, only 23 minutes, productive still, 10-2-8, a steal and 2 blocks, but he's really struggling to get up to 30 minutes now. We're seeing DJ Augustin and Shelvin Mack get a lot more minutes. Payton is still providing value for 12-team leagues, but it feels like he's just not going to get back to that 32 minutes he was playing earlier in the season. No As Gordon, so Mario Hezonja got another start. Wasn't quite as good as he was in that last game, 10-6-2 with 2 triples. And when Gordon does return, Hezonja's value is going to be limited. That's why I wouldn't have seen. Many people asked me yesterday, is he a must-own guy? And I think the answer to that's no. Ken Birch, who I thought was behind Mo Spates, well, not I thought, he was behind Mo Spates until this game, and then he was back ahead of him, 8-5 with a steal and a block, 18 minutes. I like what we've seen from Birch, still just a deeper league sort of a player. Well, Augustin had 8 points, and Shelvin Mack had 4, 7, and 5 in his 26, and their major fantasy function is just cutting into Lord Alfred Payton's minutes. The next game we look at, the Milwaukee Bucks and the New York Knicks. No Muppet for the Bucks. Johnny Henson was out. Matty Dellavedova's out. He's going to be out for 3 weeks or so. So we had the newly acquired Tyler Zeller, who only played the 6 minutes, and Thon McCur started at center. 7 minutes for Thon with a steal and two blocks. Even if Henson does get traded and they install McCur as the starting center, I don't think he's going to be a 12-team league guy. We saw 20 minutes out of Marshall Plumlee, and I think Tyler Zeller will push into that 16 to 17-minute role. And I wouldn't be stunned if Zeller plays ahead of McCur on many nights. With no Brogo, with no Daly, it was Shawnee Kilpatrick who got the bump, as well as Jason Terry. 20 minutes for Terry, who had 2 points with two assists and two steals, while Kilpatrick had 16 points in his 17 minutes. He can be an interesting point streamer, but more of deeper league, while Terry's giving you pretty much nothing. Jabari had 10 and 3 in 20 minutes, so the minutes are going up. There's a chance that by March, I would say, he's playing 30 a night. That's a chance of that, but depends on where you are. When do your playoffs start? How are you battling? Can you afford 20 minutes per game for Jabari? Will you be out of the playoffs by the time he becomes a usable option? That's something you need to pay attention to. Bledsoe had 23, 5 and 8. Middleton had 24 and 2, while Yanni had 23, 11 and 6, one steal, two blocks, and one teabag on Tim Hardaway Jr. If you haven't seen his dunk, make sure you go check it out. Oh, also, Tone Snell, terrible. 0 points in 18 minutes. This bloke, how does he continue to get any minutes in the rotation, especially ahead of guys like Sterling Brown, who did go scoreless, but I like Sterlo a lot more than Snelly. Not really going to be challenging for standard league value, though. On to the next. The big news, of course, is Kristaps Porzingis.
Porzingis!
That's probably the last time we'll be playing that drop this season until we get into the New York Knicks season in review show. Porzingis has torn his ACL and he will, of course, be out for the season and most likely will miss the beginning of next season. It's a terrible blow for this team who exceeded expectations, started to fall off a bit, and now will likely have no chance of making the playoffs. The thing you got to do now is pause the podcast and go and add Michael Beasley. That's pretty straightforward. He played 35, 37 minutes in some of those games when Kristaps was out earlier in the season. So don't be too concerned. Now, he was shooting really well. The numbers have dipped in terms of his shooting recently, but he was an efficient shooter last year. But with the extra usage coming his way, will his efficiency drop? I don't think you should care, and he needs to be owned in all leagues now as he will be the starting power forward. He didn't do much in this game, 9 and 6, took 11 shots and the shots didn't fall, but the usage is going to be high for Beasley and he'll be able to put up some pretty strong numbers as we move forward. Now, the most common question I got when Porzingis went down, apart from Beasley's, do we go and add Kyler Quinn or do we go and add Billy Hernan Gomez? Well, the answer to that is Porzingis wasn't really playing much at center at all. So there's not a huge impact on what happens with these minutes here at center. He played 11% of his minutes at center this year, Porzingis, which is like 3 minutes a game. Maybe it's that. Now, do they bring Bill Hernan Gomez in to play 3 to 4 minutes a game? Maybe, but he's not absorbing 34 minutes of Porzingis. They're not going to start running out lineups of Kylo Quinn and Enes Kanter together for long periods of time. You might get 5 minutes of Bill Hernan Gomez. You might get an extra 2 minutes of Kylo Quinn, but it's not really going to make too much of an impact in 12-team leagues. Now, the other side of that coin is that you could say, well, are the Knicks going to just, they're going to be out of it now, so do they all of a sudden start putting Billy Hernan Gomez in and playing him 28 minutes and just sitting Enes Kanter? I don't necessarily think that. I don't think that will happen. Again, we hear all this talk, oh, they're just going to throw it in and going to develop these young guys and sit everyone down. I just don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, Kanter is not old. I think he's 2 years older than Hernan Gomez. And while Bill's still got his rookie deal, that makes him a viable trade asset. And he has officially requested a trade out of New York. Maybe he gets some minutes over O'Quinn. Maybe O'Quinn gets traded. But I don't think it's all of a sudden going to be 28 minutes for Billy Hernan Gomez as we move forward. Nor do I think that Quinn's all of a sudden going to be playing 25 minutes consistently. It's going to be a bump to Doug McDirt, to Lance Thomas, to Beasley, maybe an extra 2 to Kylo Quinn, maybe 5 minutes to Hernan Gomez, and they try and run a little bit of Cock and Canter together and get 5 minutes for Bill in there. But it's not going to be such a huge, huge change that you see Billy running out there for 26 minutes. And I even if they start dropping out, I just don't think they're going to just sit Kanter and just not play him at all. That sort of mentality is just not something that I think that NBA teams are really going to want to go down, especially with the way that the Bledsoe stuff happened last season. Kanter, 19 and 16, 32 minutes. So, in fact, he played more minutes in this game when Porzingis went down. Trey Burke got 23 minutes, more than Jarrett Jack, more than Frankie Ntilikina, because Timmy Hardaway also suffered an injury. He got kicked in the leg where he had that stress reaction. He thinks it's okay, so I think we may have dodged a bullet there. If he misses some time, then we will see some Burke Ntilikina and Jack Ntilikina lineup, so that maybe bumps a little bit for Frank, but nothing to be too excited about in terms of their rest of season value. The next game up on the slate, Houston Rockets and the Brooklyn Nets. Point guards against the Nets, they go off. Chris Paul, 25-7-5 with two steals. Jimmy Harden, 36-4-5. Fantastic. Centers against the Nets, they go off. Clint Capella, 32 minutes, 18-11 with a steal and four blocks. Basically, just everything that the narrative suggested would happen did happen in this game. Eric Gordon returned, played 28 minutes and had 13 points, while Gerald Green got hot, had 16 points with four triples. But in those 18 minutes is what we're focusing on there. Trevor Ariza's out for another couple. Green can have short-term stream value, but it's not long-term now, especially with Gordon back. Ryan Anderson sprained his ankle, only played the 9 minutes. Initially, he was probable to return, and then they ruled him out for the game. He might miss one more. That's going to bump up PJ Tucker's value. It gives a couple of extra minutes to Gerald Green and to Luke Marmute, but nothing that's really moving the needle for fantasy. On to the Nets. Dinwiddie, 18-3-9, three steals and five triples, continues to put up numbers, only played the 25 in this one, but that's a strong, efficient shooting night for Spencer, while D'Angelo Russell had 10-1-2 in his 19 minutes. Caris LeVert copped a smack in the head, bleeding, evaluated for a concussion. He only played 12 minutes, 9-3-3. He's not really a 12-team league guy anymore, while Jarrett Allen had 16-2 in his 23 minutes. Unfortunately, outplayed in terms of minutes by Jahlil Okafor, who had 15-6. Allen is still the guy to own there, and Okafor's more of that deeper league player. There was no Quincy Acey, there was no Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, and when both of those guys come back, I think it's going to be Okafor that cops it there. Recently signed Rashad Vaughn played 4 minutes. That's mainly because of LeVert's injury. I wouldn't be caring too much about that. While Jumpin' Joe Harris had 8 points in his 28 minutes, and he got the start with Damari Carroll scoring 21 as he pushed down to the power forward position. The Boston Celtics and the Toronto Raptors. The Celtics got smashed. Kyrie was back, only played 22 minutes as the minutes were spread all over the place due to the blowout nature. 17 for Kyrie. Terry Rozier played 24 and had 18-5-4, four triples and two steals. We're hearing Marcus Smart's name bandied about in trade rumors. I don't think he's going to get traded, but Rozier is absolutely worth holding, just at least for a couple of days anyway, or until Smart gets back, until we see where that goes from there. Jaylen Brown, free throws are a problem again, but 11-6 with a block. I don't think he's a must-own 10, and he's probably not must-own for 12s just with that inefficiency issue. Bad night for Horford, who had 2-6. Vanilla Tice had 10-2 in his 22 minutes, while Marcus Morris was inefficient, 12 points in 30 minutes, but at least he got those minutes. Still no Greg Monro, of course. Onto the Raptors. Lowry had 23-8-4, six triples in only 25 minutes. I said that he does pretty well against Boston, and he backed that up for me. DeMar DeRozan, maybe not so much, 15-3-6 in 29 minutes. But Fred VanVleet played a team-high 31 minutes, 10 points, three rebounds, and 8 assists. Granted, the extra minutes were due to the fact that it was a blowout. DeLon Wright also was good, 14-2-3 and 3 steals. But VanVleet is really producing nice numbers. I'm not adding him in 12-team leagues. He's more of a deeper league guy, but he's providing really strong, strong value for this team. Valanciunas, only the 21 minutes, 2-7 with a steal and a block. Far from his best night, but we're not dropping just based on that performance. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Atlanta Hawks, another blowout. There was no Deontay Davis, no Tyreek, of course, and no Chandler Parsons. So Ivan Rabb showed us. These are the sort of things that Ivan Rabb, he was a guy that was projected to be a top 10 pick in 2015. Inexplicably, in my opinion, went back to college and then fell all the way to the second round. He had 10-11 with a steal and a block in 21 minutes. Of course, he is behind Deontay Davis. There's Jarrell Martin and Jermichael Green ahead of him, but he showed a little bit here. Enough to give you, I guess, a glimpse for what he could potentially do in a dynasty format. Andy Harrison, 9 points in 24 minutes. Wayne Seldon, this is exactly what I talked about with Seldo last week when people were really, really get going hard on him. Must own guy, Wayne Seldon. Really going hard on him. He's just not that good. He had 7 points in 25 minutes. He's inconsistent. He's fine to own. He is far from a must-own guy. While Dylan Brooks had 12 points on 14 shots, he's getting some more minutes. He's more consistent than Seldon, but neither of them are a really solid top 100 guys. Only 19 minutes for Marcus, so I had some foul trouble, but this game was out of hand pretty early. Onto the Hawks, Ersan Ilyasova returned. He started, only played 19 minutes, and the word is that he is unlikely to trade. He has got a no-trade clause given the nature of the contract he signed, and he has absolutely no intention of waiving that, is the report. I think it came from either Mark Spears or Mark Stein. I don't remember which one it was. So it seems unlikely that he goes. Now, he is a player that could find himself in this low 20s role instead of the high 20s role he played earlier in the season, but it doesn't appear that he is going to get traded. It does appear that Mark Bellinelli will. He was held out of the game as they have trade discussions. He is going to be gone. That's going to open up minutes for guys like Tyler Dorsey and perhaps DeAndre Bembry. It doesn't impact the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. It doesn't impact Kent Bazemore. They're getting their 28 to 30 every night. Bellinelli wasn't cutting into that. It might make Bembry an interesting guy if he ever eventually returns. Delaney played 15 minutes and Isaiah Taylor played 18, and they're going to get a little bit of a bump as well when Bellinelli is gone. The Baptist played 26, had 15 and 10. He is a guy to own. I still think he's a hold. While Tyler Dorsey, probably the more surprising one, I think I said yesterday he's not a point guard. Then he went out and dished out 7 assists, 10 points in 29 minutes for Dorsey with 2 steals. Played a lot at the 2, though, of course, with Dennis Schroeder getting those point guard minutes. But Dorsey has continually seen his minutes rise, and I do like him in 20-team leagues as a guy who could force himself into a larger role as the season continues. And if Bellinelli goes with no replacement there, he could find himself in a 25-minute role each night as we move forward for the rest of the season. The Washington Wizards and the Philadelphia 76ers. A lot more Brad Beal at point guard here. 41 minutes for Beale, 37-5 with 5 triples. The minutes are a little bit of a concern for Bealo, but good numbers, and you're really enjoying that. That means that's limiting Tomas Satoransky, who had 6-2-3 in 22, and Timmy Frazier, who had 2-4-3 in 15 minutes. If there's someone that you want to add, Josh Jackson, Markieff Morris, Michael Beasley for Satoransky, absolutely no issue in doing it. Satoransky is an absolutely fine guy to own, but he's not a high priority, high upside sort of a player. Marcin Gortat, 17 minutes for him, 4-2-4, and a distinct hatred of John Wall, apparently. A steal and a block, outplayed once more by Jan Mihinmi, who had 13-4. Mihinmi, coming into the picture for 16 team as well. Gortat is clearly out of the standard league discussion. Big minutes for Oubre again, with Beal playing at the point guard position more. Only 10-4 with 3 steals. He is inconsistent. That has been a hallmark of his career through his first 3 seasons. For the Sixers, Benny Simmons, 15-6-8 with 3 steals and a block, 36 minutes. I selfishly want him to get this all-star bid that open now that Porzingis is out, mainly because I just want to have our first Australian in the all-star game. To me, it comes down to him and Kemba. If I had to be neutral about it, I would give it to Kemba, but Simmons is definitely deserving of that spot, so I think it's going to be between those two players. And if the fact that Dragic got in and it was all, had to be exclusively because of record, then Simmons has the record advantage over Kemba, so maybe he gets that spot. Redick had 18 points with 6 triples and, four triples and 6 assists. The 6 assists is a little fluky for JJ there, while Dario Saric had another 20 points with 7 assists. I found out yesterday there are still people holding on to Markel Fultz, even in standard leagues in IR. I just don't see it having any impact. I don't even know when he's going to be back. I think he's going to be really limited. I still like him long term, but I would not be holding him in my IR spot at all. Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot was available to play, but he didn't. Justin Anderson and Jared Bayless were ahead of him. Not really much to talk about for the Sixers here, fantasy-wise, though. Phoenix and the Lakers, no Devin Booker. So Joshy Jackson played 36, had 16-10, 2 blocks, didn't shoot efficiently, but still put up big numbers. He is a must-own player. TJ Warren, 24-6 with 4 steals, a strong night for him, while Marquise Chris came off the bench behind Dragan Bender, had 10-6, 2 blocks and 2 triples, an indication of what he can do when he actually gets on the court and has his head screwed on. He is a fine guy to own, and let's just see what happens, but I'd have other guys ahead of him, some of those guys, Josh Jackson, I'd have him ahead of him. Tyson Chandler played 30 minutes, 8 and 13 with 4 assists. It is a back-to-back for the Suns, so he might not play tomorrow. Alex Len has been putrid in the last couple of games. I never thought that he was a must-own guy, and I still clearly don't think that. Dragan Bender, 38 minutes, 8, 6, and 4, only 2 of 10 shooting. There's a chance that Bender starts at center tomorrow, with Chandler unlikely to play. That could give him some value on a 6-game slate as a streaming option, but otherwise he's not a high-priority fantasy guy. Joshy Gray, backup point guard, 8, 2, and 2 in 17 minutes, while Ulis had 8, 1, and 7. Ulis just is not worth owning, I don't think, in 12-team leagues while Booker is out. Onto the Lakers, Brandon Ingram at point guard again was a success. 26, 4, and 5, 2 blocks and 2 triples. He is really coming on strong, as is Josh the Hitman Hart. Hart made another start, 31 minutes, 15 and 11, 3 threes, a steal and a block. I talked about him plenty of times throughout the preseason and the start of the season, saying I really loved him from a fantasy point of view, and I think he can be a solid player, and he is really showing that now. There's a chance that Lonzo doesn't play for a while, and they said if Lonzo is due back the game before the All-Star break, they'll keep him out of that game anyway. So I reckon there's a chance he misses the next 3 to 4, or maybe next 2 weeks anyway, 3 to 4 games or next 2 weeks. So Hart has some short-term value for sure. Julius Randle, 21, 8, and 5 in 27 minutes, while Brook Lopez, not as high as the last two games, but 12 points, all from 3, with a block, and he played 23 minutes, while Larry Nance down under 20 once more. The future MVP looked a little better, 16 points in 27 minutes, still a hold, but he is, of course, faded, while Jordy Clarkson has struggled. Takes as many shots as he wants, no doubt about that. 7, 4, and 5 in 27 minutes, and Caldwell Pope, 5 and 6. I don't think Caldwell Pope or Clarkson are must-own guys in 10 or probably even 12-team leagues. The last game of the night, so little to talk about from a fantasy point of view, intriguing from an NBA point of view. The Thunder beat the Warriors in Golden State. Westbrook, 34, 9, and 9. Mallow sprained his ankle early, didn't return, only had the one assist. That's going to mean more minutes for Jeremy Grant, who played well here. 16, 4, and 2 with 3 blocks. He can be a block and steals type streamer, but I wouldn't be rushing to grab Grant. I think that Mallow will be fine. Maybe he misses a game or two. It's not going to be a long-term thing. Adams had 14 and 10 with 3 steals. There was a change in the starting shooting guard. Terry Ferguson was removed entirely from the rotation. Joshy Huster started, but it was Alex Abrines who showed the most value there. 9 points, all from 3, with 2 steals. He is becoming a 3-point streaming option. For the Warriors, Durant, 33 and 6, and Steph, 21, 5 and 5. Draymond got ejected. He has got 3 more techs to go until he is suspended for a game. He's on 13 for the season, 5, 8 and 7 with 4 blocks. So really providing those peripheral numbers, but the scoring obviously low, and Clay disappointing once more, and not much else happening for the rest of this team. They have lost 3 of the last 4, the Warriors, and they are struggling. So I tweeted this out today. Everyone who, like, when KD went to the Warriors, the NBA is ruined, I'm never watching it again, and even at the start of this year, why bother? It's just going to be Warriors-Cavs in the finals again. Well, if you look at what's happening now, the Thunder's beaten the Warriors the last couple of times. The Rockets are playing really well. The Cavs are an absolute shit show. The Celtics, the Raptors, all these teams. And maybe it is still Warriors-Cavs. Who knows? But at this point, you can't definitively say it is definitely going to be the Warriors, and it is definitely going to be the Cavs. And I think if you even said it's likely going to be the Cavs, you'd probably be in the minority there. So that's great to see that, you know, things get figured out. Yeah, the Warriors with Durant last year, it was easy for them. We knew that. We saw that. But yeah, things change, things adjust, and we're seeing that already. 1.5 seasons in, things are changing. Teams are working things out against the Warriors, and they're playing differently. The Thunder, the Spurs still an option, the Rockets, all these teams are starting to play them a lot harder and a lot better, and the Cavs, they're just destroyed pretty much. All right, that wraps up all the action from Tuesday's games. I'm going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back and we're going to have a look at the action for DFS for Wednesday's games. We're going to shine that player spotlight on Cheick Diallo in New Orleans as well. So we'll be back to talk all about that in just a moment.
I will not know you, whoever you are.
the slots and the sin, and we'll go to my car. And if I start falling down to the ground, and if I remain and you cause me that pain that I've heard all about, well, I will not hear you, your shuffling song with your hooves.
All right, guys, we're back. Let's take a look now at the player spotlight for today's show, and we're going to be going to New Orleans and talking about a young second-year big man, Cheick Diallo of the New Orleans Pelicans. Of course, Diallo was selected with the 33rd pick in the 2016 draft, and he was a guy that I was a bit shocked that he fell as far as he did. I was impressed with him as a rookie in Summer League, put together some good performances, and had an interesting fantasy profile as a guy that could hit some threes, but more of a guy that can score, can block some shots, can be efficient from the free throw line and from the field, and put together some decent performances. He barely played really last season, only 17 games, 12 minutes per game, averaged 5-4, but towards the end of last season, started to show what I was talking about. In his last three games, he played 26, 27, and 29 minutes, had 7-9, 19-11, and then 12-16. He'd been barely used this season, even when Davis was injured, but the last three games, with DeMarcus Cousins gone and Omer Asik out of town, he's found himself a regular rotation spot, in fact, playing ahead of Dante Cunningham. 16 minutes, 15 minutes, and 15 minutes. 7-9, 10-10, 6-1, with a block shot in each of those. And in fact, in those last three games, he is the 150th ranked player. And that's, yeah, it's not by doing much, it's by averaging a block, 8-7, yeah, on 50%, and hasn't missed a free throw. But those are interesting numbers. And if you're in a deeper sort of league, for a guy that does project really nicely, per 36 numbers, great in those last three games, 18-16 with 2.4 blocks, they're really, really good per 36 numbers, clearly, and that's on low usage. He's never going to be a high usage guy. But he is a guy that has started to step things up and has now got himself an opportunity to be in the rotation here and carve out a role. I'm not saying to add him in 150 deep leagues like 12-teamers or even 14-teamers. He is a 16 to 18 team league guy who still has some variability in his game, but can be a low schedule volume three blocks streamer who won't hurt your efficiency. His advanced numbers in terms of box score plus minus have been fairly putrid. He's a negative 6 this season, negative 5.6 last year, but positive win shares per 48. Good stuff there. Really strong PER. His true shooting is up this year. But his on-off stuff is disgusting. But I guess that's what happens when you're playing with Anthony Davis and then, of course, with DeMarcus Cousins. He's a negative 26.4 this season in the 199 minutes that he's played. He played 199 minutes total last season as well. But he is a guy that can put up some impressive numbers for a big man anyway. If we look at what he did in that first summer league that I was talking about, he averaged, or even this year's summer league, he averaged 19 points, 10 rebounds, 1.6 blocks in 30 minutes. Last year, he averaged 11-9.5 with 2.2 blocks. He hit a couple of threes. He was efficient from the field. He was efficient from the line. You know, really showing you a little bit of what he can do. He didn't play very much at all in his time at Kansas, but his numbers still translated pretty well. And we're starting to see that come about for Diallo now. I guess Cousins' future uncertain. If Diallo puts together a strong second half of the year, there is a chance that he can find himself in a decent role next season, at least for the first couple of months, and maybe push into a 16-team, 14-team league category. But I do have my doubts that he will ever become a top 100 guy. I think he might top out at 120, but that's more going to be if he finds himself on another team. If he really goes off here in this stretch and starts to put together very, very strong numbers, then maybe another team goes, well, you know what? We could use him as a 22, 24-minute backup five who can play a little bit of four, who won't be a hack issue, who can be a rim protector, who can stretch a little bit, who can move. He still has concentration issues. He still has defensive lapses, as you can see with those piss poor on-off and box score plus-minus numbers. He still has a lot of mental issues to really get a hold of, but that's something that should start to come together in the next couple of seasons. Don't value him too highly, but for now, for this year, he is, I think, going to have a steady role and a steady enough role that you can look to him in those 16 to 18 team leagues and have a decent level of confidence that he is going to provide you the numbers that that you hope that he will provide. Let's look at the perfect DFS lineup now, starting with FanDuel. Eric Bledsoe, 42. Kyle Lowry, 43.6. Brad Beal, 44.9. And Josh the Hitman Hart at 37.7. Johnny Simmons, 48.4. Paulie George, 63.5. Ivan Rabb, 30.2. The Baptist had 29.5. And Joel Embiid, 53.9. For a total of 393.7. And that cost $59,300. On DraftKings, Lowry had 45.5, Spencer Dinwiddie had 42.25, Simmons 42.25, TJ Warren 44, Ivan Rabb 31.25, Joshy Hart 39.75, Paulie George 62.25, and Brad Beal 48.75 for a total of 363, and that cost the full $50,000 dues. All right, let's preview this six-game slate that we have got for Wednesday's action. A really light on Wednesday. It is a weird week in the NBA this week, of course, as we discussed on the Monday show. The first game, the Brooklyn Nets and the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons are favored by 9, and the total is 209 points here. Caris LeVert, he did get smacked in the head today, so he's going to be evaluated for his concussion. Quincy Acey and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson are all also questionable, so there could be a ton of minutes opening up for guys like Jumpin' Joe Harris, Allen Crabbe, Nick Stauskas, Rashad Vaughn, Damari Carroll moving to the four as well, with more minutes for Okafor and Jarrett Allen. They did threaten to play Tim Mozgov, but it didn't happen, so we'll see how that pans out. On the Pistons side of things, it's Dwight Bikes who's questionable. That's not really impacting too much for DFS. Point guard Ish Smith, 6,300 point guards against the Nets. We know we love it. Smith's probably priced a little bit too high to really lock into cash, but I still like the upside, and the matchup should, if you're really on the fence and you go, well, matchup's really in his favor and Bikes is out, then I could see using Smith in cash in that spot. Spencer Dinwiddie's at 6,900. He has been putting up some really good numbers with a 35 average over the last five and 39 over his last three. You know, strong numbers. I don't feel super confident that he's going to drop a 35 or 36 here against the Pistons, so I think this is maybe fade territory. At shooting guard, D'Angelo Russell at 54. I don't care for that. LeVert at 4,000. No. Lukey Kennard at 38. Kennard actually dropped 19 points in 24 minutes in the last game, which is obviously really good numbers. I don't feel really all that strong about that. At small forward, the Blue Swimmers at 47. He has been poor. 17 average over the last five. Just no real threat to do anything, so I am out. Reggie Bullock at 47. Clearly, I'd have Bullock over Crabbe here. No doubt about that. All about Reggie here as a tournament option. Damari Carroll at 51. Strongly in on him. Big game today. Chance to play power forward as well, which can boost his numbers. While Stan Johnson at 58. That's probably just a little bit too high for Stan. I think he can get you 24 or 25, but at 58, he needs more. And the matchup, it's one of the areas the Nets actually do defend well, is on the wing. So I'm not sure that Stan is necessarily the best play here. Jumpin' Joe Harris could be a tournament guy at 38. In fact, I think he's a pretty decent tournament. If all those guys are ruled out, I'd be all about Jumpin' Joe in cash formats. Rondé's at 68. Won't want to use him even if he's back. Well, Blake Griffin at 92. That's strap in, mate. This is looking to 40-point territory, 45, 50-point territory for Blake. All about him here. AC, no. Tone Tolliver at 4,400. I think that's a tournament look. He could get really hot. The minutes are going to be there. I don't really feel great in cash. Andre Drummond's at 11,000. That's stupid high. He's had some big games against Brooklyn. We've seen centers destroy them. I'm fine using Drummond. I don't think he's a lock for cash, though, just given how high that price is. But this is looking like a 50-pointer at least, possibly getting to 60 points. I do like this for Drummond. Jarrett Allen at 57 is maybe a smidge high on a back-to-back. Not really feeling that well. Okafor at 37, sure. I think you can look at Okafor just because of that price in a tournament, but that's about it. The DraftKings side of the equation. Drummond at 9.8, absolutely love that for cash. Griffin at 9,000, they are a strong cash stack and tournament stack. Dinwiddie at 62 is way more in the picture. Jarrett Allen at 51 is cash usable, and Reggie Bullock at 46 I like, while Stan Johnson in a much better situation, 4,700, great price. Matchup still not ideal, but I think that Stan's got that 32-33 point upside, and that can work at that sort of a salary on DraftKings. A really interesting stackable game over there, not as much on FanDuel. The next game, we've got the Houston Rockets and the Miami Heat. The Rockets on a back-to-back on the road, 4.5-point favorites, 211 is the over-under. Justice Winslow and Khalil Linick are both questionable for Miami. Winslow dealing with an illness, and Linick dealing with a shoulder strain. If both those guys are out, we're going to see way more of Tyler Johnson, the Duke Wayne Ellington, and probably Bam Adebayo, maybe some Jordan Mickey and Jim Johnson. So there's a bunch of guys who will benefit, not one straight-up outstanding guy that's going to get all of those minutes. So there are a few options to pay attention to. At point guard, Chris Paul, 9,300. Feasted against the Nets. It's a back-to-back. The Heat are really good at defending point guards. Slower pace game. I'm out on Chris Paul here. Tyler Johnson at 43 gets a big bump if Winslow's out. So I'd be all about using him if Justice is sidelined. While the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, is at 6,900. I think that's probably just a little bit too high for Goran. He does fairly well against Miami, but still, against Houston. I think that's just a bit too highly priced. Bring him in at 6,000, 6,200. I think that's good value, but I'm not really all that interested here. Jim Harden at 11.2. Yep, let's go. He's always got that 65-point upside, so we're all about Jimmy here. Well, the Duke at 4,400 gets that tournament bump if Justice and Olynyk are out. Eric Gordon's at 57. I don't want anything to do with that. At small forward, Joshie Richardson's at 67. Solidified if Winslow's out, but strong even so. Well, Winslow at 46. Coming off a 34-point game, if Olynyk's out and he is in, it's a nice matchup for Justice. I do think that this is, it's usable, maybe just for tournaments, but I could see it sneaking into cash if he happens to play. PJ Tucker and Gerald Green, not really feeling all that interested with them. At power forward, Olynyk's at 4,800. I don't think he's going to play, so I'll leave that alone. Jimmy Johnson at 53 would be tournaments only. Not feeling great with him and his value. Ryan Anderson at 42, I doubt he plays. While Marmute at 43. Yeah, Marmute at 43. I think you could almost use that in cash, especially if Anderson is out. Don't think there's high upside, so not much tournament value, but he can get you 23 or 24, which at that price with FanDuel's pricing, not a bad deal. Bam Adebayo's at 42. If Olynyk is out, he gets a few more extra backup center minutes. Plus, Whiteside could really get in trouble playing against the Rockets. Although, Hassan has done very well against Houston in the past, averaging 45 in their last three meetings. Whiteside's a tournament guy. Adebayo's a tournament guy. I wouldn't want to use either of them in cash. While Clint Capela at 7,800, he has struggled against Miami in the past. He is playing out of his mind, but that price is just a little bit too high. So I think that he, in most situations, is a fade guy. On DraftKings, Jim Harden at 11.3 and Joshie Richardson at 5.9. I love Richo at 5.9 there. While Justice Winslow at 4,100 is in a really good position as well, if we assume that he plays. Adebayo, same sort of story. I think I'm fading Capela, Whiteside. Dragic is too high, and Chris Paul in fade territory as well on DraftKings. Let's go to the next game. We have got the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Timberwolves are favored by 3.5, and the total is 221 points. The Wolves got the victory over the Cavs last time. Let's see how the Cavs pull up into this one. At point guard, Isaiah Thomas is at 6,500. He is not playing well at the moment. You know, tournament sure, but that's really about it. While Jeff Teague at 58.
My name is Jeff.
I think Jeff Teague at 58 is interesting. The matchups are positive, but I wouldn't be... The matchup is a brilliant, brilliant positive. I wouldn't be looking to him for cash, but I think he's a great tournament option here. You could also throw Tyus Jones in there, but as much as I like the way he plays, it's not really a big stat accumulation, especially when Teague is around, so that wouldn't be great value there. Derrick Rose, that's the opposite of great value. Shooting guard, Andy Wiggins, 6,200. I think it's a tournament play, 36 average against the Cavs. He has done well against them in the past, mainly because their defense is just so piss poor, and it continues to be that way. If John Simmons can go and drop 34 on you, then Wiggins has got a chance to drop 34, and that salary makes him an appealing tournament player at least. Kyle Korver, Jamal Crawford, J.R. Smith, Marcus Georges Hunt, the other shooting guards, no interest. Small forward Jim Butler, 9,600. It's expensive, but I like it. I like the floor of it. I like the upside. He's got 60-point upside. He's got almost 45-point floor. I like this for Jim. It is a great matchup for him. LeBron at 10-9 has been subpar. That's fair to say. The price is coming down. There is a real chance that he can just drop a massive score on someone, but I don't really feel that that's going to be a cash option. More for tournaments, I think, for LeBronald. At power four, we can look Nemanja Bjelica at minimum salary, but that's just not happening. At power four, Jeff Green at 37. He's always a weird one that goes off occasionally, but no. Taj at 6,100, I think, is fairly strong here. Jay Crowder at 4,000 is the opposite of that. Tristan Thompson at 4,500. Yeah, he has some okay games, but not really a DFS player, so I'm out. Channing Frye, no, really, not really. Well, Karl Anthony Towns, 9,300, in on that. He can put up numbers. Plenty of centers do. Again, plenty of players do against the Cavs, so I'm in on Townsy here against Cleveland. Over on DraftKings, Townsy at 91 and Taj at 54 are the good cash and tournament guys. LeBron and Wigo at 10-9 and 6-1 are good tournament options. Yeah, Jim Butler at 95, probably just a little bit too high given the salary cap structure. Teague at 57 is an interesting guy just given the matchup there as well. Let's move on to the next one. Who have we got? We have got the Indiana Pacers and the New Orleans Pelicans. No spread currently because we don't know the status of Victor Oladipo, who missed the last game. We know Daz Collison is out. If Oladipo is out as well, it boosts Mighty Joe Young, it boosts Lance Stephenson, and it boosts Corey Joseph a little bit as well. At point guard, Rajon Rondo dropped 34 in the last game. He's at 4,800. The Pacers' point guard defense had been really good. Now, Darren Collison missing is a factor, but Corey Joseph's quite a good defender. Rondo is as inconsistent as they come. He is a tournament guy, and that is it. While Corey Joseph, I don't love him from a fantasy stat accumulation point of view. He's at 4,900, tournaments only, I believe. Mighty Joe Young at 37. Love the upside for Joe there, especially if Oladipo is out. Ian Clark at 3,700. He's had some okay games, but really nothing to tickle my fancy. At shooting guard, Vic Oladipo, 9,700. Somehow his salary has gone up despite missing the last game. Good matchup for Vic. I just feel like that's just a little bit too high for Oladipo, so I'll pass. Drew Holiday at 76. Give me Drew over Vic comfortably. Save myself that $2,100. Really happy with what Drew's doing. At small forward, Etuan Moores at 45. Yeah. I think his tournament upside's low anyway. Well, Stevenson, Lance Stevenson, 5,600 for Lancey. I think there's a 30-point game in his for Lance. I like him for cash if Oladipo is ruled out. Bojan Bogdanovic is on a roll. I don't trust it, and I don't want to spend 5,800. At power forward, Nick Mirotic, 7,200. Shit the bed in the last one. That's a high price, but he's got the 40-point ability. I just don't think his floor is really safe enough to use him in cash, so he's a tournament guy. Thaddeus is at 5,900. Not really getting too excited there. Well, same with Sabonis or Cheick Diallo at 38. Not really going to do too much to bring those salaries back. Tone Davis at 11,900. We've seen a lot of big numbers for centers against the Pacers. Tone Davis is an elite center. Struggled in the last game, so he'd be looking to rebound and could be an 80-point guy here. Unlikely, but could be. I like him for cash and tournaments. While Miles Turner at 6,500 has done well against Davis in the past. 42 average in the last three games. Davis and Boogie, of course, in some of those games. He is a tournament guy, though, because we just don't know if he's going to be able to stay out of foul trouble and stay on the court. That has been a concern with him lately. On DraftKings, Tone at 11,600 and Miles Turner at 56. That's really hard to go past Miles Turner at 56. And for tournaments, Mighty Joe Young at minimum salary, Corey Joseph at 46, Nick Mirotic at 65, and Oladipo at 8,600 are in play. Lance at 58 is probably just a little bit too high over on DraftKings. The next game is the Utah Jazz, the rolling Utah Jazz against the Memphis Grizzlies. The Jazz are favored by 7.5 and the total is 202. Deontay Davis and Chandler Parsons missed today's game for the Grizzlies. If they are out, we're going to see more Brandon Wright, more Ivan Rabb, more Jim Ennis, and more of those other wing guys, Dylan Brooks, Wayne Seldon, those sort of players in Memphis. At point guard, Andy Harrison's at 51. Had a stinker today, but I feel all right about him at least getting me 25 points. So I think he's fine to use as a cheap point guard. Chalmers, no. Ravishing Rick is at 7,600. Absolutely crushing at the moment. I don't feel comfortable about spending $7,600 on Rubio, especially for a cash lineup. In tournaments, fine, but for cash, no. Shooting guard, the Don. Donovan Mitchell, $7,500, cheaper than Rubio. Shithouse in the last game, the Don, but I'm ready to get back on. This has got a real opportunity to be a big game for Mitchell. While Rocket Rodney Hood's at 51, we can never trust A, that he will stay healthy, or B, that he will shoot consistently. So there's no way to use him in cash, but he's got comfortable upside, 40, 45 point upside, which is great at 5,100. So a good tournament play. Wayne Selden's at 45. Give me that extra $600 and take Rod Hood every day of the week over Seldo there. Small forward, Dylan Brooks, Brooksy, 4,100, very low upside, low floor, so that's a fade for me. Jingling Joe's at 47, don't mind him for cash, I think there's a solid floor with a relatively limited upside. Jim Ennis, Royce O'Neill, who's been crushing at O'Neill, he's at $4,000. I don't hate using him in cash. He's averaging almost 30 points in his last three games, 22 over the last five in just 22 minutes. At 4,000 points, he needs to get you 20, 22 to make it worthwhile. I think it's a possibility. Don't say it's a lock or anything like that, but it's a possibility. Power forward Derek Favors at 5,500 has been playing much better, but I have no interest in using him here. Jermichael Green, Jarrell Martin, Jonas Jerebko, same. At center, Marc Gasol, 9,400. Hate the matchup against Gobert. I'm not getting anywhere near that. Gobert at 74. It's a negative matchup for him as well, so I think both centers are fadeable. If I'm going to use one, it's going to be Gobert because it saves me 2,000 and they could both probably get you 35 points. Deontay Davis at 4,400. Don't know if he's going to play. I think I'll leave him alone as well. Over on DraftKings, I like the Don at 7,000. That's a really good price for Donovan Mitchell. Not much else happening. Rick Rubio at 6,700, absolutely in play, especially for tournaments, and you could use him for cash. And the same sort of stuff applies to Rocket, who's at 4,900. Jingling Joe probably a little bit high there as well, coming in at 5,000. Let's go on to the last game of the night. We have got the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. This could be just, I don't know, this is a disaster in the making here. Tyson Chandler unlikely to play. Devin Booker a potential not to play. So we could be getting minutes from Devon Reed, Joshy Gray, Dragan Bender at center. We might get Alec Peters minutes. There's lots of weird shit that's going to go on in this game. Be prepared. At point guard, DeJounte Murray, 5,500. You don't get many better matchups than this. There might be some garbage time. So he is a GPP option. Whereas Tyler Ulis, even if Devin Booker sits, he is not a guy that I want to rely upon for cash. Tone Parker, Pat Mills. I reckon Pat at 36, you could look at it for a tournament, but really unlikely. Devin Booker at 75, I think is fadeable. Dan Green, Manu, Troy Daniels, Bryn Forbes, Reed and Hilliard. Very little happening with any of those guys. There's going to be some weirdness happen on Phoenix side, no doubt. So maybe you could throw it onto to Joshy Gray or Davon Reed, but unlikely. At small forward, Kyle Anderson's at 5,600. Hasn't quite been where he needs to be, but I don't hate it for cash. It's a good matchup. He could get you that 27 pretty comfortably in this matchup. TJ Warren at 68. Even though it's the Spurs, I like using him here. And then we go to the power forwards. Chris at 4,800, an opportunity for more minutes. Great tournament upside. Same as Bender, mainly because of the price at 3,800. If he starts at center, hopefully he gets a few close to the basket shots, some more rebounds, blocks some shots, and at 3,800, he could comfortably get you 20, even if he has a poor night just by virtue of playing at the center position. At center, Gasol's at 5,700. I don't really like that for him. Actually, I didn't talk about LaMarcus Aldridge. I should talk about him. 8,600 for Aldridge. Really like that. Could be a blow-up, but I think he can drop a 40 even in 25 minutes here, which is a decent value. Well, Davis Bertans, who started the last game, he's a minimum salary guy, but this has got some blowout written all over it, so there could be some upside there for him to come in and drop five or six threes and really bring that value home. Alex Len at 4,600. Well, he's going to have the opportunity, but can he actually stay on the court for more than 10 minutes? Tournament, but really low priority, I think. On DraftKings, I like Aldridge at 84. I like TJ Warren at 63 and Joshy Jackson at 57. I think Jackson's a solid play over on FanDuel as well. Didn't mention him. Kyle Anderson also pretty good on DraftKings at 4,800. Let's go to Yahoo now. For tournaments, I like Drummond. I like Oladipo. Miles Turner, Dan Green, Lance Stevenson, Davis Bertans, and for cash and tournaments, Tone Tolliver, Dylan Brooks, Jingling Joe, Tristan Thompson, Reggie Bullock, Corey Joseph, Andy Harrison, Stan Johnson, Jarrett Allen, Joshy Jackson, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Mark Gasol. On Moneyball tournaments, Clint Capella, an option there, a little bit cheaper, Bam Adebayo, Wayne Selden, Davis Bertans, Joe Young, for cash, Stevenson, Ingles, Etwan Moore, Reggie Bullock, Rocket Rodney Hood, Corey Joseph, Taj Gibson, Joshy Richardson, Drew Holiday, LaMarcus Aldridge, Townsie, Blake Griffin, Jim Butler, Jim Harden, Andre Drummond, and Tone Davis. And on Draft Stars tournaments, we've got Marc Gasol, Miles Turner, Andy Wiggins, Andy Harrison, Corey Joseph, Wayne Seldon, Davis Bertans, Jeff Green, Kyle Korver, Cheick Diallo, and for cash, Mighty Joe Young, Tone Tolliver, Tristan Thompson, Reggie Bullock, Stan Johnson, Jared Allen, Josh Jackson, Taj Gibson, Joshie Richardson, The Don, Nick Mirotic, Carl Anthony Towns, Blakey Griffin, and Andre Drummond. Don't forget, if you are listening to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, if you go leave a 5-star review, it's a great way of helping this show out. Another great way to help the show out is just give it a retweet on social media. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble. You'll see the podcast posts go out. Give those a retweet. It's a great way of helping out the show. I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. If you are watching this on YouTube, leave a player's name in the comment below for the player spotlight. Your turn to choose for tomorrow. I'll be doing a Reddit AMA at around 4 p.m. Eastern on the Fantasy B-Ball subreddit, so check me out over there as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
Oh, no!
John Wall.